The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
We shall pay any price, bear any burden, meet any hardship, support any friend, oppose any foe to assure the survival and the success of liberty.
American prosperity is the bedrock of freedom and security all over the world.
An obligation to the heritage of liberty and dignity handed down to us by our forefathers.
It's time for the Pro-America Report with Ed Martin on The Answer San Diego.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. It's Ed Martin here on the Pro-America Report. We've got some great guests coming up this week, including, I'm not sure if we'll do the interview today or not. We'll play it. Joseph Massey, a poet who was canceled by the politically correct cancel culture and a very successful poet. He's now, he was interviewed on Tucker Carlson's show, Megyn Kelly's show. He's a successful poet and he survived that. It's a very interesting story. We'll talk with him. Also, we'll get an update from Pam Fichter either today or tomorrow on what is happening in Missouri, the great show me state, the pro-life state, the Missouri miracle, so-called by Bridget Van Means to eliminate abortion in Missouri. Well, they got one of these ballot initiatives coming, and so we'll talk with Pam Fichter. So here's what I want to tell you, what you need to know today. First of all, thank you to many of you who tuned in to my Rumble TV show, The Pro America Report, every live. It's going to be live every Tuesday at 3 p.m. Eastern time. We're going to do that show live, kind of like what you get here, including the wink, including some interviews. Yesterday, Jeff Clark, also Paul Ingracia, a lot to do, a lot of people to talk to. It's right down the block from the Capitol, so we expect to get lots of folks who are paying attention on Capitol Hill to come right down the way, a couple of blocks away, and go in studio at the Rumble DC studio. Pretty cool. So, but here's what you need to know today. You are watching a concerted effort by the powers that be to try to get us to stop talking about abortion. Not even stop doing something. They want us to stop talking about abortion. Now, I have said publicly, I think that Donald Trump did a very admirable job of communicating what his political positions are and how he thinks he can win and succeed when it comes to abortion. He is somebody who has to win an election. Now, I believe abortion is wrong. I believe that life begins at conception. I believe that you shouldn't have abortion in our community. We certainly shouldn't have Planned Parenthood receiving hundreds of millions of dollars. What you need to know is you're watching the media, the moderates, the devil, try to get us to stop talking about abortion, let alone do something about it. Arizona, in the last 36 hours, the Supreme Court of Arizona looked back at the law from the 1800s which banned abortion in the state. And they said, well, if that law was passed, and it was, if that law is clear, and it is, then it bans abortion in Arizona. And the bar, the limitation on passing a ban to abortion was Roe v. Wade, which was created out of whole cloth in 1973. And so reasonable, serious judges said in Arizona, well, that ban still stands. And now there's politicians and others that want to say, hey, let's change that. Let's, you know, make exceptions, whatever. That's a different conversation. You can have that conversation. That's a preference. That's a policy preference. That's a set of issues that you can take up. But here's what you can't do. Don't tell me to stop talking about abortion. Don't tell me that because you don't think it's a winner politically, I'm supposed to stop talking about abortion. I want to talk about the fact that Planned Parenthood receives $700-800 million a year to do abortion. I want to talk about the fact that we don't have enough support for young women and young men, families, fathers should be in this loop, to stand up and do the right thing. I want to say abortion is wrong. I want to say, what do you think the consensus in Arizona was 140 years ago when they passed a ban on abortion? It was that the killing is wrong. We're going to talk, Pam Fichter is in Missouri, about the fact that their Planned Parenthood is spending tens of millions of dollars across the country to put on the ballot in 2024 these misleading ballot initiatives that talk about women's health services. Meanwhile, we're waiting for the annual report of Planned Parenthood any time now. They're supposed to be out by now, but it's not. When last year's report came out, an independent analysis of it said, oh, yeah, they're not spending as much money on health services. They're spending more money on abortion. In other words, let's find out what these Planned Parenthood efforts are doing. And why is it that Planned Parenthood is spending tens of millions of dollars on ballot initiatives? Why do you think that is? Because they make money. The system makes money, and the system supports the politicians who are on that side. It used to be that you could be a pro-life Democrat. You can't anymore. You can't anymore. You are not allowed. Daniel Lipinski, is that how you say his name? Daniel Lipinski, a congressman from Illinois, was beaten in the primary, Democrat primary, by a Democrat endorsed by Pelosi, AOC, everybody else, because Daniel Lipinski was pro-life. And he was unabashed about it. Not anymore. Not anymore. It's not allowed. Now, you can say what you want about the Republican Party, and we should. Why does the Republican Party fund abortion? Why doesn't the Republican Party do more? Why doesn't all these people that say they're pro-life, Paul Ryan, he was Speaker of the House. He was pro-life. He didn't do anything. He didn't do anything meaningful. He didn't step up to the plate. All these politicians don't step up to the plate. But here's my point. Don't be fooled into stopping talking about abortion. The reality is, the more we talk about abortion as killing, the more we talk about the specifics of late-term abortion in particular, which the Democrats support, the more people say, yeah, I don't want that. And they're willing to do something. There was a study, I cited it for years. I got to go find it again. There was a study out of Harvard, I think it was, that any time that the argument was, I'm not saying it's definitively proven. I'm saying the argument was this. Anytime you file pro-life legislation, even just file it, in other words, it's, I'm talking about the state level, especially at the state level, people will, the argument is that you reduce the number of abortions because you're having a conversation about exactly what's going on. You're not just glossing over it. Well, that's what we should do. That's what we should do. And if the conversation is, well, should there be a federal ban? And the consensus is that there shouldn't. I disagree. I disagree with the consensus. I would like to see U.S. senators and U.S. congressmen and women elected to office who would say, let's ban abortion. But if we don't have it yet, we can still have a conversation about it. And more importantly, if this is going back to the states, in each of these states, there should be strong conversations. In Vermont, if you want to have abortion up until the 9 month of birth, have at it. I don't think they want that, but they can, if they want to, they can. And in Texas, if you want to protect life from the very beginning, you can. That's the beauty of the system now. But let's be clear. For those of us that think that it's murder, we shouldn't be silenced. We shouldn't be told, oh, you made progress already, therefore be quiet. No way. And let me be very clear. That doesn't mean I'm arguing that politicians, candidates for office, have to take every position that I think they should. Their job is to get elected. And their job when they get into office is to do what they said they're going to do and their values are going to set. But I'm not arguing. I'm just saying, don't make me be silent. Don't make pro-lifers be silent. We should be raising the voices even louder, and we should be making more arguments even more persuasively. We should be talking about the family, motherhood, fatherhood. We should be talking about how can we incentivize and protect people who want to have families. Can we incentivize it through the tax code? Can we protect the women because through the system of healthcare? The fact is that if you're poor, if you're low income, below a certain level, you get free healthcare, 100% free. They can't deny that. If you're middle class, well, you have to have some healthcare. You have to pay something. Maybe we should be talking about whether we can have any pregnancy covered. I'm not sure we can afford it. I mean, we certainly can't afford it when we're spending tens of billions of dollars, John Podesta moving money around to green organizations. There's a green initiative in the Inflation Reduction Act, that boondoggle. It's hundreds of millions of dollars. It's actually tens of billions of dollars that are being distributed by John Podesta to nonprofits who are promoting climate change. Promoting efforts to fight climate change. That's just a transfer of wealth from you and me to left-leaning groups. It happens the same thing with Planned Parenthood. But maybe we can't afford to pay for every single pregnancy, every single procedure. Maybe not. I don't know. But we ought to have the conversation. I would rather pay for that than I would for more windmills and the Carnahan family making money off of windmills. That's what happened in Missouri 15 years ago. The reality is we should be talking more about life. The reality is, and what you need to know is, we need to be talking more about life persuasively, seriously, with ideas, a vision for the future, win the hearts and minds, push the policies all around us. Don't be fooled. Every single day that there are stories and conversations about abortion as killing and about what it means is an opportunity. Opportunity to find avenues to protect life. Opportunity to find ways to stop the killing. That's what you need to know. All right, we got to take a break and be right back. Ed Martin here on a Pro America Report. Don't forget, visit ProAmericaReport.com. Sign up there for all our emails. Be right back. Pro America Report, Ed Martin. Welcome back. Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. A fascinating man we're speaking to next. Someone who I have now read his works. He's got a new book out. And I was telling him offline that I do talk to a lot of people who have books, just not many that are poets. And his book, his name is Joseph Massey. His newest book is called Decades, Selected Poems, out a few weeks ago. And I was watching him on X, where you can see him be a pretty interesting at J. Massey Poet. He was describing that he's actually selling, people don't usually buy books of poetry, and he's selling lots of copies of his book of poetry. We'll talk about that. So welcome, Joseph Massey. How are you, sir?
Oh, great. Thanks for having me.
So first, what's it like to be a poet? I mean, sometimes people are professors and you say, well, they're a professor, they teach literature and they write some poetry. You're a poet. I mean, how'd you pull that off?
I don't know. And for many years, I don't think I was pulling it off in a conventional sense of like having a stable career. But I was headed that way. I lived in Northern California throughout my 20s. That's where I wrote my first three books. And I was pretty poor. I mean, I was getting odd jobs here and there. But when those books started getting reviewed, I found myself gradually having a career in poetry, which is unheard of. I was getting invited to read and speak at universities, and I was working at UPenn for a period of time. And then I was canceled, which is a part of my story, in 2018. Unfairly, I've written about it at length. Anyone could read a long essay I wrote about it on X or on the website Quillette, where it was originally published. But when I was involved in that world of academia, I mean, it was completely strange. I was a fish absolutely out of water. I dropped out of school in the ninth grade. I did not like school. They were terrible schools. And, I spent all my time in public libraries and writing to poets I admired, for mentorship. And so I don't know what it's like to be a poet. I've never really known much of anything else. I started writing when I was 12, and, it's a way of seeing the world, a way of receiving the world and processing the world, that is inextricable to my way of being at this point. So it's like, it's just who I am.
Well, and we're talking with Joseph Massey, and I did kind of want to go to the fact that you were canceled, except that it's such a stupid, when I read your writing on it and I read the coverage of it, it's just like, you want to ignore stupid things. And I'm not saying it cost you a lot of time and energy and all, but I'm really more interested in what it means to be a poet, because you know, people think poetry, America, it's a funny moment in our great prosperity as a country and a culture. But, you know, people sort of lose the idea of poetry. And they think it's, you know, sort of rhyming funniness, as opposed to, when you read again, Joseph Massey's book, Decades, Selected Poems is the newest one. But if you go online, there's something called the Poetry Foundation. You can see different excerpts of his poetry and all. Is everybody, I'm being a little bit facetious, but is everybody a poet? They just haven't slowed down to think about it. Meaning, is there a part of communicating who we are that you got to slow down, or you got to kind of pause and see if you can figure out? Is that too much to say? I mean, I know being a real successful poet is a matter of more effort and more focus, but there's a part of it that we're all sort of there, aren't we?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and that's the part of a person that is touched when they read a poem that moves them. It's the poet in them that's responding to the poet. You know, the relationship between the reader and the poet, really the reader kind of becomes the poet, kind of takes on. You're actually embodying it, whether you read the poem aloud or to yourself, you're taking in that language. And in my case, I love to read a lot of dead poets, and, you know, but they're still living, you know, the words are there, the breath is there, you know, the breath they use to compose those lines, and it's all still there. And so there's a timelessness to poetry, because it is such a human art, and it has deviated so far from that, in our contemporary culture because of the creative writing industrial, complex. It's academic system that pumps out MFA graduates, 3,000 of them a year or so, who flood the literary world, and you know they win all the first book poetry contests, and most of it is just dreck. It's political poetry. It's like totally obsessed with identity and sexuality, and there's no actual poetry there. So poetry that's any good, that actually resonates with that innate part of all of us that is a poet, you could say, you're going to have a hard time finding it at Barnes and Noble.
Yeah. All right. So I found my notes. I was talking to our guest again is Joseph Massey. I was telling him offline before we started that I had some notes that I couldn't find. I found them. And so now I want to get to it. So I went and looked, and I looked at your poems, and I read your poems. And I mentioned to you that I'm an old friend of mine is Paul Murray, who's a poet and kind of a contemplative poet, but he often quoted Denise Levertov. And so I'd never read much of her. But I went and read this essay she wrote that's somewhat famous, Some Notes on Organic Form. And I read that, and because she mentions Hopkins, Gerard Manley Hopkins, who I love. But the thing about this essay is it's basically, she says, you got to sit quietly, and she's, I think, contemplative, and let the things come to you. It's not that you need to put this into a iambic pentameter or something. It's you need to actually kind of feel's the wrong word. It's not feel only, but it's sort of kind of experience. That's a little bit of your insight, right? With one of the aspects of your poetry, this sort of locality and all. Can you do that in a world that's so fast now? And you can, obviously, but the reason we can't do it is because we're moving too fast.
Yeah, it's so great that you brought up Denise Levertov's essay on organic form, because when people ask me about, you know, do I write in form or free verse or whatever? Right. I always reference Denise Levertov's phrase, or she coined this idea of organic form, because the poem always does have a form. The form is there. It's explicit and implicit, but the organic part of it is, as you were describing, it's a work that the work comes out of the experience itself. And so when you read my work, when you read through Decades, my new book, you're going to see lots of descriptions of place and the natural world, etc. And almost all of those images that are in the poems were written on the spot when I saw or heard or felt what was happening around me. That's an important part of my work. I always carry a notebook with me, and I write all the time as I'm going about. And you know, I walk. It's like a daily. I almost like walk and pray at the same time. But it's also a time to contemplate and write. And if language comes to me, I put it down.
Joseph Massey, again, is our guest. The poem I was talking about is one of the poems I saw of yours, Illocality, Joseph Massey, which I read that one and I thought of Denise Levertov and that experience. But well, for one second, how does what you went through, just to summarize it, and I should tell people that you can go to Joseph Massey's got a Substack that and a lot of his writing is there that you and some of his poetry, in fact, quite a bit of poetry, but also it's called Dispatches from the Basement on Substack. And I'll put a link up to that. But you went through this Me Too cancellation thing, which, again, you can read about it there. But you mentioned the modern moment we're in, that if you can't find an audience, if you're a poet, you don't care because you're not really waiting for the audience. You've just got to get it out. I'm overstating this, but let me pretend that I'm right. But you actually, you're now getting an audience. People are buying your book, which is must be an interesting experience, and you, at least in more numbers than usual. But B, well, we're moving along so far, so quickly. Joseph Massey's our guest. I'm going to take a break and keep going. We are pre-recording this, so I can do that. I'm going to take a quick break so we can keep going. It's Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. We're talking with Joseph Massey, the poet and writer, and I'll make sure to put links to his writing as well as his Substack, and we'll be right back. Welcome back. Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. I expected my interview with Joseph Massey to be interesting, and he's certainly done that. But I also didn't know I'd keep going. So we decided to go a double segment with him. So let's keep talking to Joseph Massey here on the Pro America Report. He's the poet and has a new book, Decades, which has gotten a lot of attention. So, Joseph, thank you for taking the time. You had a whole set of people, entities, the culture that tried to shut you down. And most people, when they get a real move against them to shut them down, they just do shut down because they got to survive, right? They got to function. Yeah. How'd you not get shut down in your own life, in your own self? And then how do you feel about are we breaking out of the period where people are just shutting down anybody who's not conforming with the sort of modern sensibility and, you know, playing along?
Well, how I got through it plainly and simply was by the grace of God. I leaned in heavily into my spiritual life prior to being canceled. I was involved in some new age meditation kind of groups. And once I was canceled and really life as I knew it was over, the floor dropped out from under me. The meditation and breathing exercises weren't cutting it anymore. And so I started hanging out at the Catholic church here in town, and I was baptized as an infant. And so I proceeded to take the necessary classes, et cetera, to be confirmed. And that's what got me through that first year of cancellation, when I really was not able to start rebuilding yet. But in 2019, a year after the initial wave of cancellation, that's when I started to rebuild. I came back to social media because I had deleted Twitter. Twitter was just an absolute, I was tormented every day, people harassing me. So I just deleted it. But I came back, I wrote the essay for Colette, and that blew up. I gained many followers from that. I made lots of friends from that essay, people who also have been canceled. And I was determined to rebuild and to disseminate my work on my own terms without depending on any literary gatekeepers, because I knew and had known for some time that that world is completely corrupt, and it's even more corrupt now than it was then. And by corrupt, I mean, it's just, it's saturated with Marxist politics, identity politics, gender ideology. And if you're a white straight male you already have a target on your head. And so I was determined to do something outside of that world. And so Substack has been major for me as a way to get the work out. And then I started my own imprint, the Exile Press, to publish my own books, so I don't have to deal with anyone canceling me. I had offers to have for this new book to be published by other people, but I didn't want to risk the book being taken out of print. I can't you can't trust it. You can't trust someone when they say, "I'm not like that."
Right.
Because once when the mob comes for you and they've never come for you before, you have no idea what it's like, and it's a terrifying thing. And so I do it myself now, and I've been blessed to have friends who've, like Megyn Kelly. I was just interviewed by Tucker Carlson. So many people who've helped me broaden my audience considerably beyond the margins of a typical poet. I mean, most poets are lucky to sell 50 to 100 copies. I'm outselling that by, I'm selling thousands of copies. So,
Joseph Massey again is our guest, and I'll put up a link to his book, which is called Decades, Selected Poems. And he mentioned the Exile Press is who's publishing it. It's his imprint. Everybody thinks is self-referential by definition, but even more so, like talk to a historian, they'll say, oh, you know, you got to understand history, what's going on. You talk to a political scientist, they'll say, you know, the political science is broken. You know, the system has become, but you know, can you envision a thriving America that does not have it could always have an underground poetry and seriousness of literature and communication. It always will. I think it's a little bit like the underground church. You know, I once said to a Polish guy, I said, what happened? They took Poland off the map for 150 years. And he said, we had the church. We were, you know, there was no Poland, except there was never not a Poland because we had the church. But can America thrive qua America? From the beginning, we had this extraordinary creativity I always draw it, even though it's different, I draw it to our patent system, if you can believe it. In America, our patent system said, you're so talented from God, if you make something, you can patent it, therefore you can have control of it. And we've done that for our creators in every way. Can you have a flourishing America if the system is stifling of people like you were? I know you're not now, but in schools, in universities, you can't do what Joseph Massey's doing and go to grad school or get your dissertation approved. So can we have a flourishing America if we don't have something different than we're doing now?
No. Absolutely not.
Okay, good.
And yeah, I mean, plain and simple. And thank God for people like, you know, Chris Rufo, who's doing the work of exposing all the rot in the universities. I mean, so much of what's wrong with this country really starts in the universities. They are hives, they're wasp nests of subversive politics that affects all areas of life, and certainly has infected culture to such a point that it does at times seem quite hopeless. But I can say with absolute certainty, I mean, I'm not the only poet doing it kind of, I mean, not underground. I mean, I've been in some mainstream, I got some mainstream attention, but you know, poetry's always thrived underground. The arts have always thrived underground. The arts will continue to thrive even as the culture is just full of decay. And so I do have hope for that. I have hope that America can come back, but it's going to take a lot of work and a lot of patience and a lot of praying.
Joseph Massey has been our guest. If somebody came to you, a young person, it probably happens now that you've gotten some attention again, and says, I feel like I'm like you are. I'm called to be a poet. What do you tell them to do?
I do get messages like that fairly frequently, and I tell them to just keep reading, read as much as you write. And, don't be discouraged. by the way things are right now in contemporary poetry. Things are kind of a mess. And I don't usually tell them this, but I hope that I can be an example to them that you can do it outside of that system. You can find other poets who are like-minded doing vital work outside of that world. And I emphasize read, and read the dead poets. Read the poets that they tell you not to read, or you know, because they've tried to paint Walt Whitman as a racist, Wallace Stevens a racist, right, et cetera, on and on. Read them. Go read those people.
Yeah. All right. Well, and Joseph Massey, read Joseph Massey. And again, his book, which is available everywhere. Books, you mentioned he's on Tucker, Megyn Kelly. It's the book is called Decades, Selected Poems, just out recently, again, from Exile Press. If you go online, there's something called the Poetry Foundation. You can see some of his poems there. They're intriguing. I like this one, Illocality, I mentioned to you, Joseph. So, hey, thanks for being out there, and we'll have you on again, and keep up all your work. And I think, you know, the one encouragement to people I tell them all the time is you don't have to wait around for somebody to tell you if you're good or not. You can decide to publish it. You can decide to put it on Substack, and you can see what the reaction is, and you can get feedback, and you can get better. And if you want to get really better, you can work at it. And that's more freedom than we've had in some ways. So thanks for being a witness to that.
Oh, my pleasure. Yeah. Thanks for having me.
All right. Joseph Massey, everybody, we'll put that up, put up links on social media. Very, very interesting. Interesting time, and interesting to have a poet and a voice out in the conversation like this is. I mentioned the Tucker Carlson interview got a lot of attention. That's one of the ways I got referred to Joseph Massey. All right. We'll take a break and be right back. It's Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. We'll be back in a moment.
This is the Phyllis Schlafly Report, a daily commentary continuing the conservative pro-family legacy of Phyllis Schlafly. Now, the president of Phyllis Schlafly Eagles, Ed Martin.
Once a child has learned the basic powers of logic and deduction, he can understand relationships between concepts pretty intuitively. For example, a child would understand that if you pay someone to not work, they will be lazy. Similarly, if you fail to punish someone when they do evil, they will continue to do evil. We know that children can figure this out because when they don't have consequences, they misbehave. Most people take this ability to logically see relationships between different concepts into adulthood. But there's one kind of person who actually seems to lose this ability as they get older. That kind of person is called a politician. Today, American cities are synonymous with high crime rates. It's become so pervasive in places like St. Louis and Baltimore that it's hard to imagine it could be any other way. NGOs, nonprofits, think tanks, and universities receive billions in taxpayer money to research the causes of crime and how it could be solved. They will obviously never solve the problem because they make money by researching the problem. The solution is very simple, as El Salvador has demonstrated over the last year. The country was previously ravaged by criminal gangs, which were notoriously violent and had captured whole towns. In 2015, El Salvador's murder rate was 106 per 100,000. And so the president of El Salvador decided that the country had enough. And so he gave the simplest and clearest answer to crime: arrest all the criminals. And it should surprise no one that this worked. Now, some cities in El Salvador boast murder rates of 2.4 per 100,000. That's a 98% reduction. It's remarkably simple to clean up cities and stop crime. Last year, even Gavin Newsom showed his capabilities by cleaning up the San Francisco streets, but only because Chinese President Xi Jinping was visiting. Our leaders have the power to save our cities and stop crime, but they don't. For the basic negligence of their duties as elected leaders, these politicians should go down in history with the greatest shame.
This has been the Phyllis Schlafly Report with Ed Martin from Phyllis Schlafly Eagles. The lines have been drawn, those who support law and order and those who don't. Of course, criminals who burn cities and loot businesses want to defund the police. PhyllisSchlafly.com chronicles a plan to keep the streets of America safe. Go to PhyllisSchlafly.com. Thanks for listening, and join us next time for the Phyllis Schlafly Report.
Hey, welcome back to the Pro America Report. This is Ryan Hyde again, filling in, guest hosting here for Mr. Ed Martin today, and glad to be back with you to wrap up the show. What a good one. And I just wanted to come back in, and I got a couple of thoughts to offer. We always talk on this program about being informed, about going and finding out for yourself, following the facts. What is it? Ed's phrase, distrust and verify. That's a good motto in today's world, with a world full of fake news. We really are responsible more than ever for finding our own information and facts, for doing the legwork, for being citizen journalists, since the journalists aren't doing their job anymore. Now, make no mistake, there are still good resources. There are great places out there. We talk about them all the time. In fact, we have a lot of their folks on, people who write at American Greatness, folks who are over at the Epic Times, Just the News, Newsmax. There are good places who are writing good stories, who are speaking the truth, who are finding real facts that aren't just the mainstream media, that are all driven by the same slavery narrative, pro-establishment, pro-machine, to support this regime that is currently in place, the Biden administration, the leftist move that we're seeing. There are good places. However, I would like to encourage you once again to consider a lot of the resources that we put together, because there are a lot of places that move fast and furious. It kind of gets lost every single day under the news cycle. There's just no way to help that. The news moves so fast that some of these places have to keep up with what's being talked about. And then there are a lot of fantastic organizations, but they advocate for just one thing, or they really have their one big issue and they talk about a few others. And I have no fault for any of these things. It's just pick and choose, each to its own. But there is a really neat legacy here at Phyllis Schlafly Eagles. And this is kind of what I wanted to bring up. There's a really cool legacy of not only going into several different topics. Phyllis has a huge legacy across the pro-family movement, the fight for life against abortion in America, the fight for traditional marriage, both legally and culturally, the fight for religious liberty, all of these different things. There's also this huge history of fighting for constitutionalism, for a sound judiciary, for responsible fiscal policies, for sovereignty-first border and immigration policies. Across all of the spectrum, there's just this wonderful wealth of fundamental conservative principles being applied across the field of issues that face us today. And even though Phyllis isn't with us anymore, she passed away in 2016, we still carry on that mission. And even though we don't claim to be right and to know exactly what to do on every single issue, all the jots and tittles, we want to have the conversations. And we have those conversations out loud for everyone to hear and to participate in. And there is an incredible wealth of knowledge. This program, the Pro America Report, is kind of a part of that. It's under the umbrella. Obviously, we're on the Salem Radio Network here, streaming out of San Diego, and it gets, Dopplered. I don't know if that's the correct word. It gets ported into several other places as well. You might be listening to this on the radio in St. Louis or down south, or you might just be listening online to the podcast. But nonetheless, this is one of those connected things, but there are several others. I am proud to be able to host a great live stream program on Thursdays. And I don't say that because of me. It's a great program. We talk about a lot of interesting stuff and we actually talk. Mason, the co-producer of this program, he and I sit down every Thursday at noon on our live stream program called Unauthorized Caucus. And we talk about these things. We pick a topic or two and we actually have out the conversation. People hop into the chat and we talk about it. John and Andy Schlafly write a fantastic column, and it laser focuses into an issue, brings in tons of historical concepts and perspective and context. That's not concepts, context. That's the word I was looking for. It pulls a lot of great stuff together each and every week. Every Tuesday night it comes out. You can go to PhyllisSchlafly.com, and then it echoes across all kinds of places. WorldNet Daily carries it. Townhall.com carries it. So many other fantastic places echo that column out into the world, and it just keeps going. There are great things that come from here. The Education Reporter, that's another one that's just absolutely incredible. Our Education Reporter editor, Sue Kunstman, just does an incredible amount of research, and there are wonderful articles that really hone in on the education issue, book review, all kinds of great stuff available every single month over at edreporter.org, edreporteronline.org. There is great stuff, and I can't even tell you how important it is to go and be educated, to go and just fill yourself and your own knowledge with context, with little things here and there that you can recall. You don't have to know everything all at once, but you need to know a little bit of the connectors to be able to critically think about things and plug it in and put things in their place and decide where we should or shouldn't as Americans land on these issues. Let me encourage you, go over to phyllisschlafly.com, proamericareport.com, where Ed does his writings. You'll find all the stuff again for this program, but also there is where you're going to find the Education Reporter. You're going to find John and Andy Schlafly's weekly column. You're going to find the Phyllis Schlafly Report monthly newsletter. You're going to find the Education Reporter, which has been out since 1986. There are so many incredible resources, and this is just the one organization that has a well-rounded view. Again, there's several others, and you'll hear us reference them and talk about them. I can't even stress to you, as much as Ed talks about and is absolutely correct, we must distrust and verify. Where do you go to verify? This is it. I'm making that pitch. I would love, and I'm appealing to you to do that. There are great programs as well here on the Salem Radio Network that you're going to hear from also that are going to talk about all these issues in long form, and we're going to flesh it out. And how does that connect? It is more important than ever before to not only be informed and to be consuming these kinds of sources and resources, but it is important to be having those conversations with family and friends, because we got a lot of people who I think at base agree with us on a lot of the issues, a lot of these things that really are common sense, not the fake common sense things, that political phrase that the Democrats like to use. Real, honest to goodness, logical, common sense things that are better for America and better for her people. That's what we need to be listening to, consuming, processing, and then talking about to other people who we know agree with us, but they are battered every day by the fake news narrative machine that we must beat back. So distrust and verify, but there are some places to go and verify. Thank you for being with us today on the Pro America Report. Thank you for being the wonderful listeners that you are, the great family we have here to talk to every single day. Thank you to Ed for being such a wonderful host, and Mason, my co-producer, for helping me keep everything running in the background. We appreciate you. We appreciate you being here. Don't forget, go to proamericareport.com and Phyllis Schlafly. Grab today's show, share it with a friend, and we will look forward to seeing you back here tomorrow on the next edition of the Pro America Report.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.